What's going on, guys? Chris Mead back for another episode. Probably the coolest dude guest we've ever had, Sean Riley. What's going on, brother? How are you?
Chris, good to be here. Yeah, you might not have had too many other dudes on, but I'll take coolest dude for sure.
Chief Executive Dude Officer at Dude Wipes. Kick it off for me, right? Dude Wipes, you guys been around for a while. How'd it start? What was the passion behind it? Just give me some backstory for listeners who aren't familiar.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, we started a group of buddies, so kind of your classic story of we had a need, which was we had dirty asses. We were living in an apartment after college. Fast-paced lifestyle, drinking beers, eating burritos. And I started buying some wipes from the apartment, and kind of like your brother, I was kind of hooked on them, but then saw other people were getting hooked on them. And these weren't even ones you were supposed to flush down the toilet or anything like that. So we kind of looked at it and said, hey, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a cooler brand that can enter this space, better product. So dove into that. And it was really just a passion of like trying to be an entrepreneur or start a company that kind of got everything going. How do we take this idea, find a manufacturer, turn it into a brand and get it out there? So I know you were saying like this is about your biggest lessons or like your biggest failures. And the whole thing to get Dude Wipes done was we don't give a shit if we fail, right? Like we need to get this product out there, launch it, start learning. We were rookie entrepreneurs, no experience in any of this kind of stuff. So actually that like appetite for failure and not caring, just being obsessed with launching was what really got us to that first magical moment, which you know is like when you get product and you can actually start selling it to people. That's where I see most people get hung up, is that pre-launch phase, and they kind of what if, and they're scared of that failure to death. And so if you take that mindset on the launch phase of not caring if you fail, but just being obsessed with launching, you can learn a lot along the way on what needs to be better and all that. So yeah, we just kind of approached it as we want to get this done. I mean, it was launching a company, but we all had other full-time jobs. So it was just trying to get something out there, and we believed in it off the bat. We thought nobody was doing anything like we were doing and that it could be big, but we just had to take it one step at a time.
Oh, I love that. I know so many friends, and I'm sure you have them as well, where they've had this idea. One friend that comes to mind, he's been launching a bikini brand for 7 years now, and it just still hasn't happened because he's still hung up in the nitty-gritty details. And as soon as you launch anyway, there's so many things that you realize like, fuck, I didn't even think about that.
Right.
So like with CrossNet, when we first did our first import from China, all of the brown boxes got destroyed and all the steel poles ripped through the box. So we had to repackage all the boxes. We wasted probably 20, 30 grand on our first production run just because we didn't have reinforced boxes that were going to hold up the weight. So I always kind of tell the story, but with us, it first year in business was $87,000. It was like, dude, I just quit my $100,000 job. I am slinging volleyball nets on the beach and nobody cares, it seems like. And then we've had some good success afterwards. Like how long did it take from...
We outdid you barely. We were at 120K our first year in business.
Let's go.
Like
I love it.
I do remember busting through that 100K and being like, holy shit, we sold 100K a Dude Wipe. So like when you start from zero, even though small numbers like are fun.
You know? Oh, of course. What was that inflection point then? Because obviously like it takes a lot of Dude Wipes for the revenue to stack, and over time you're selling them like crazy. But what was the point where it went from this is cool and we're going to fail and we're going to learn a lot of things to, oh shit, this is a business and I'm quitting my job?
Yeah. So I ended up quitting my job pretty early because we got into an incubator. So we only had, it was our first year in business. We only had $10,000, $20,000 worth of sales. And again, it was, hey, we got in this cool incubator for 3 months down in Austin, Texas, where they take five companies a year and we could learn all about CPG, which we didn't have any clue on. So that was when I was like, quit my job. I'll go down there and I'll try and figure this thing out. And it's a great learning experience. And then, yeah, when I got back after that, we were still small. So I did some Ubering and waiting tables and stuff like that for another 6 months. But then our online, as you talk about a lot, like started taking off on Amazon in particularly. And that's where we could kind of control the message and control our destiny because all the retailers really didn't want anything to do with us. It was a very new idea. We didn't have a track record. So we had to go build that. And Amazon became that first customer we built. And then in 2015, so that's like our 2013 was our first full year. That is when we get into like a toilet paper aisle. We launch a second product, which is the Dude Wipes at Home that sit on the back of your toilet. So at first we just had the little single ones that go in your wallet, like little condom sized Dude Wipes. So we end up launching our second like complimentary product that ends up being a much bigger, faster moving product for us. And then we kind of get that first retailer to say yes and try it in the toilet paper aisle, which was the whole genesis of the business, right? Is like, we can go shake up this toilet paper space. So took a couple years for that to happen. But then like some things started slamming that year, like Rob Dyrdek's Fantasy Factory did a huge feature on Dude Wipes organically for free, just based on us writing them a handwritten note and sending them Dude Wipes and
saying we're
big fans. And then we're on Shark Tank later that year. We get a deal with Mark Cuban. So like that sends us into like, okay, we're a $1 million company right now. We can start hiring people, bringing on more of us internally, professionalizing things. And we had a little platform to build off, but it took 2 years for kind of get that breakthrough to like a $1 million business.
No, I love that. And I want to definitely get into the Amazon and the retail side because I selfishly have questions as we kind of navigate that terrain. But yeah. I saw you put up a post a few weeks ago about like Series A, Series Bs, and crazy valuations, and completely agree with you there. As a bootstrapped person myself, like a lot of it's ridiculous, but you guys raised, let's call it 225 grand, I think, on Shark Tank, 250.
Yeah. Cool. 225.
I would 225. Cool. Did my homework. I'm assuming no regrets, right? How has it been working with the shark like that? And also, were there, when you did get that money, are there any lessons that you were like, either shit, I wish we would have raised more, or damn, I deployed the capital in the wrong way that I wish I would have done differently looking back?
So yeah, I mean, that capital, and definitely we would do the deal over again for sure. Mark's just been a great like high level insight person. He's seen companies go from 1 million to 10 million, 10 million to 50, 50 to 500, 500 to a billion. So like he's just kind of seen it all. So he can stand back from afar and say, hey, look out for that. Watch out for that. He's not going to get out there and pound pavement for you and sell Dude Wipes. Like that's definitely like on the entrepreneurs, but that mentorship is great. And then also having Mark as like a lifelong advocate of the product. And we've done several Shark Tank updates. So I've gotten a lot of press and notoriety. A lot of people, that's what they recognize the brand from too. So there's kind of that whole side of it. But the money, we were in a situation where it just all went to inventory, which I would always tell entrepreneurs, that's the best place to typically put your money when you're growing. And that's where good investment capital goes. So that money just went in inventory because we were scaling fast. But we hadn't yet really closed a $1 million year. We hadn't finished that year. So the banks wouldn't really support us. But then that helped us get through the hump of that year. And then what I try and tell people do, then we opened up a relationship with banks and grew our lines of credit based on our inventory and our accounts receivable. And so year after year, we've been building that and growing the company like that, reinvesting the profits into marketing and growth. But I think there's kind of that magic kind of scenario where people think that money can like supercharge your growth. And like, it just, in my opinion, organic sustained growth with customers is like real growth. And that's the right way to do it. And that's how companies like Spanx have done it, that have gone to multi-billion dollars. So it always can be done, but it's a little harder to grasp, and you have to be more patient. I think that's the big thing too. So if you're willing to be patient and let it run out for the long run, I always recommend it. Are there certain situations where you're just in a business where you need to buy manufacturing equipment, or you just have to deploy capital in a way that you need to raise? Like, sure. But I find most businesses, if you're patient and kind of watching your costs and running a profitable business, you don't need to do that.
No, absolutely. Makes a ton of sense. And I just saw, congrats, you guys did a 702 grand Amazon Prime Day.
Yeah, one day. So
what a crazy feeling.
For sure. Yeah.
Oh, man. So talk to me about that. I mean, obviously, as somebody who is dealing with an inventory situation, we put out our cross net for the pool, and we can't keep it in stock, man. First year, we sold 10,000 units in a week. This year, we're selling, it just will not stay in stock, and there's nothing I could do to get it in stock in Amazon. So sadly, that was a big L for us this year, was not getting CrossNet H2O in Prime for Prime Day. Yeah. How long of a process was it for you guys? And I'm not sure if you're even on the logistics side at this point in your life, but how long of a process was it prepping for Amazon, like for Prime Day, getting everything in stock? And then also like any takeaways that you're like, shit, we should have done this for next year.
Yeah. I mean, it's looking at your trends, right? Like how did you do the Prime Day previously? And okay, what pack sold the best? So let's focus in on that pack next year. So sometimes you're just getting those learnings year over year. And then we got a bunch of great people on the team who are looking at having supply to capitalize on big moments. And we're in an industry where the product isn't going to spoil. We'll move through it one way or another. So what we do is we give ourselves chances to hit home runs, like from an inventory perspective. And okay, we got Prime Day coming up. We got the holidays coming up. Like, let's ramp up and be prepared to capitalize. And our only downside, if, you know, a deal doesn't go nuts like it did this year, is then, you know, we peter our ordering down a little bit in the future. So I think it's just looking at your trends and giving yourself as much as you can afford, because we could afford a bigger mistake this year. So like as our pocketbook gets bigger, like we can take bigger risks where maybe in the past we had to bet on a smaller amount of inventory and we couldn't afford to have that bigger upside. But this was just a year as we keep growing, like we like to be aggressive and give ourselves big opportunities.
I love that. Is there a channel that you care most about? Or so for us, like you got Amazon, you got your direct consumer site, and obviously you need to be at the retailers. Is there one that you focus on, or how do you kind of think about brand building from that perspective?
Yeah. Our advice we got from Cuban in the early days was don't drown in opportunities. So like focus on the channels that are working and double your velocity there or grow there, market more there. So we've really been core on customers since the early days. Amazon was our first. Then we got into Kroger, then Target, then Walmart, and always just been concentrated on like our top 5 to 10 customers and really growing in them. And at the same time, other customers we serve, like one lesson we did learn during COVID was like, if you had Dude Wipes in your toilet paper aisle and you were a customer who had made the commitment to us that you were going to slot those Dude Wipes there, we fulfilled your order. So we didn't cut a small guy so we could send a ton to the large retailers. Like we tried to give everybody their fair share. And if you didn't carry Dude Wipes regularly, like you were the people who didn't get them during that time. So definitely loyal to like who has put us in like a good position, but then focusing on the top winners. And Walmart is a customer we've done a lot of partnerships with that we really like. We're part of their Made in the USA program. So since we make product in the USA, Walmart's committed to invest billions of dollars in companies like that. And so we're a success story there. So we definitely take that one to heart.
That's amazing. How are you guys spending money with the retailers now that maybe you weren't 3 or 4 years ago?
We're doing more like retail media. So more stuff on their sites or their apps and more sampling too. We're just trying to get Dude Wipes in front of people at the retailers. And then doing cool things like our NASCAR this year. This was the first year we did it. It's co-branded Dude Wipes and Walmart. And that driver, Anthony Alfredo, on his Instagram and everything, he's promoting, hey, Dude Wipes are at Walmart. So we're also using some influencers where we think they're core to that consumer at that customer. Hey, you just go pump this customer for us. So that's kind of a new kind of cool thing we've done this year.
Makes sense. So at kind of your guys' level, much bigger than a CrossNet or the majority of the people listening to the show, but we all have aspirations, right? Like when you're spending your Facebook dollars or TikTok dollars, right? Or Instagram dollars these days, is it primarily still direct-to-consumer focused to the Dude Wipes site? Or is it more this halo of folk? Like, how are you tracking that money in versus money out on a daily basis, weekly basis? Because I made a lot of bad mistakes last year and we're rectifying them now, but it was a tough lesson for me.
For us, it's more the halo brand building on like the socials, because Dude Wipes are available everywhere. Our website is not the ideal destination for anybody to buy Dude Wipes. We're aware of the fact you'd rather buy them where you buy your toilet paper, which might be Amazon or Target or Walmart. So we're not trying to force you to do anything, but we are trying to get in front of you in those channels, have fun, hit you with our fun content, educate you about the brand, ask you to follow us. So yeah, we're not super ROAS focused on the social side. We're more focused on the ROAS when we're spending money on Amazon. Okay, how is that returning in that? So that's kind of like our Facebook D2C world where we're scientific. And then we're trying to build the brand elsewhere, which when you're omni-channel, in my opinion, that's the way you kind of have to look at it. But when you're not, or when you're selling higher priced items that, like you guys, it's just a different business that we're in. So, you know, and that's one thing I learned over the years is like really make sure the strategies you're looking at fit what you're doing, because what works for CrossNet is not going to work for Dude Wipes and vice versa. There's findings we can have from each other. You sell a hard, a good, an expensive good. You know, I sell $2.99 ass wipes, you know, like, so it's just a different business. And so always kind of look to more your closer competitors for like strategy insight.
Makes sense. And speaking of competition, like you guys, I like the way that you do it, especially on LinkedIn, kind of one-upping the others, saying, hey, this is how our sales compare to your sales. Like Spikeball is a good competitor of ours personally, right? And we don't talk too much about them. Like, what's your mindset there? Because some people love to shit on competition. You know, the Midday Square guys, like I loved what they did with Hershey, just kind of trying to take them down. What's your thoughts there? And have you had any backlash?
I mean, in terms of marketing, like an enemy is always a good thing. It helps the consumer decide these are who these guys are and these are who they're against. So for us, it's just kind of toilet paper. Like that's the old guard and they have these old brands that also sell wipes, but they aren't really looking after the consumer too much or doing interesting things. So we can kind of come in there and shake things up. And I think we want to win, right? And I think that's fine to say, right? Like, hey, we're trying to win. We're competing. Here's the numbers. Here's the story. So that's what we've started kind of like unapologetically sharing. And I think the coolest part about it is people like it, they like to hear that. They're learning things. They're understanding what's happening in real time. So as we got kind of more into it and more bullish, like on our journey, who we're competing against, hey, here's the 1, 2, 3. Cottonelle's in first place. We're in second. Charmin's in third. Here's how it's going at Target. We just overtook them on Amazon. Like it's what we're doing and we're having fun sharing it. And yeah, no backlash at the end of the day. Yeah. It's all competition and it's all good. But also at the same time, like we want to win. And I think people need to be more happy to talk about wanting to win.
I love it, dude. It's so captivating and it's just really exciting to watch. And from the content creation, like even the at-home stuff that you guys did with Walmart, like how involved are you with that process? Like what's the team look like there? Because I mean, it's got to be so fun to write that copy and it's every time you must see it. This is my company. Like that's got to be such a crazy feeling. Like talk to me about that process.
Yeah. I mean, the creative side, we keep the team pretty small and I would definitely recommend people do that for like the ideation because just you get a couple heads in a room, you bounce some ideas off each other and you figure out what you like. But yeah, things like those billboards, I would definitely be, you know, very involved just because it's fun and what can we say? And we got to put up 30 of them. And so we need a lot of ideas and then we see what people resonate in the next batch, we learn some. So billboards have been new for us, but a ton of fun. We really think we're like disrupting reality out there. It's like we joke around here, like the tides have turned, like billboards during the digital revolution were like, why would anybody do that? And now people are like, why would anybody do a Facebook ad? Like billboards actually get like attention and people kind of have to look at them while everyone's just trying to scroll to the next thing on their phone. So we're having fun getting out there and saying funny shit.
I like it. Have you noticed like an early lift? I know it's new for you guys, but do you actually see increase compared to like store by store locations next to a billboard or not?
Yeah, some of the regional stuff, because we like attack a region, we'll monitor what's going on. And we've definitely seen increases. And then we've seen our billboards go viral online, which is the other, you know, like we're not paying for that impression. That all happens online. So it's kind of funny. It's become a content thing too, which no one's charging us for. So we're basically getting free content out of the assets. You know?
That's a great way to think about it. I love it. Yeah, we just got a SportsCenter 2 weeks ago, and that was like 7 million views on this one video for free from a kid that we paid $100 to do a video. It's just like little things like that add up. It's like, how many wins can I stack like that?
And taking all those little chances, like people will see something that goes viral, and they just got to understand that you guys took like 20 swings. You sent 20 different kids, different packages and stuff like that. One of them hit. And so, yeah, it's a low batting percentage, but you just got to take a lot of shots.
Absolutely. For sure. And stay alive until those shots actually take off is the hardest part. So
yeah, I love that.
Yeah, dude.
No, right, cool. I love what you guys have done, Chris. I'm a big guy on like focused on what you do well. But you guys have really like created these really cool line extensions with the soccer and the pool. Yeah. And it's like stuff that makes like perfect sense and kind of fits the CrossNet brand. Like you're not married to that. It needs to be on land or sea or with your hand or with your feet, but you have this fun game that these people can get involved with. So I think I haven't seen too many people kind of nail line extensions like you guys have lately.
Nah, I appreciate that. It means the world. We actually got soccer into Europe just a few months ago, and it's going. We're not in soccer season yet here in America, but it's soccer season year round out in Europe. So it's been fun to see that game.
About a big market, soccer players worldwide.
Yeah, you know? Right, man. Like, it's crazy because we're just scratching the surface of like what that game could be here in America. But over there, it's selling like 10 to 1 compared to our flagship product that we're known for. Right. So it's going to be, as we become this global brand, which is like, as me as a marketer, I'm trapped here in Miami and it's beautiful 365. But I think you're up in Chicago. I know it gets cold as hell really quickly, right? Like, I want to market to 365 days of sunshine. So like getting Australia off and going, getting Europe off and going, South America, those are kind of like my visions for the company.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. You got the more days to play, so focus there.
Exactly. Cool, dude. Well, I appreciate you jumping on. I want you to leave us with this. If there's one lesson, one fuck up, one mistake that you wish you didn't do, or you could tell your old self like, hey, dude, don't do this. What would that be?
You know, I don't know if there's been one so bad that I wouldn't want to do it again, because you definitely learn something all the time from these fuck ups and mistakes. So like a classic one I always tell people is like, we launched deodorants and then we cut them as soon as we sold out because we were like, what are we doing in this category? We got enough business over here and it was dilutive to the brand and distracting and stuff like that. Actually, when we shared that failure with Cuban, he made a really good point. He's like, you know what? You should be glad you did it, because you would have been always saying, and that still would have been in my mind, well, what if we launched that? Would people like that? Blah, blah, blah. So it's like, you know, those failures actually can accomplish something by getting it out of your mind. That's not going to work. We tried it. So yeah, I mean, have we wasted our time on things? For sure. And we were entrepreneurs just cutting our teeth all along the way. But I don't have one that sticks out to me that's just like, man, I wish I wouldn't have done it. Because yeah, you always learn something.
No, and that resonates, man, so much. Like, for you guys, especially as you guys add more money to that piggy bank, right? Like, there's always so much more you could do, but that focus is so important. I could go make 100 games tomorrow, but that takes away from the core CrossNet mission. That hit home for me, so I appreciate that, and I'm sure it'll definitely resonate with a bunch of our listeners. So thanks for that.
Yeah, right on, man.
Thanks, dude. Well, Sean, I appreciate you coming on. Dude Wipes available everywhere. Pretty much.
Everywhere toilet paper is sold in the U.S.
Let's go. I love that. Thanks so much, brother. We'll talk soon.
Cheers, man.
So that's another episode of My Biggest Lessons. Each and every week, I'll be having one of my favorite entrepreneurs come on, share their stories, their mistakes, the things they wish they knew. Entrepreneurship's a lonely road, right? You only learn by getting better. You only learn by making mistakes. So I want them to come on, share their stories. If you have somebody in mind that you want on, drop a comment, subscribe, share with a friend. Let's get the best people in the world on here. Thanks for listening.